on DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
Five Live.
So Mark's on holiday. So Hardeep Singh Kohli is here to talk about this week's movies, which apart from The Bourne Ultimatum include Bratz, the movie, Copying Beethoven, Eagle versus Shark, Me, She, the Water Giant. But we'll do the top ten. How many of the top ten have you seen?
I have seen about half the top ten, and the remainder of my family make it up to a healthy 9.
Right, OK.
And bizarrely, the only film on the top ten none of us have seen is the only Hindi language film, which is at number 10, Chuck the India, which translates for non-Hindi speakers as Pick Up India, which in itself, frankly, should be translated for English speakers, because I've got no idea what
so that's
Pick Up
right,
India
so that's the one you that you haven't
that's
seen.
One we haven't
so if
seen.
Anyone has seen Chuck to India, we'll take your review to mayo@bbc.co.uk. Before we go any further, Frank, have you seen any of the others in the top 10?
No, I must admit I haven't. You know, I'm too busy working.
I know,
really.
Absolutely.
Being boring and things like that.
Security of the world to look at.
That
okay.
sort of thing.
We'll come to Bourne in just a moment. So Chuck to India is number 10. Shrek the Third is at 9.
Not as good as Shrek the Second, is what my daughter tells me, who's 9 years old. But when you've made something like £250 million with Shrek 2, I think that answers the question, why make Shrek 3?
License to Wed at number 8.
License ought to be revoked, according to my 14-year-old son.
Do you take everything that your kids tell you as gospel?
Yes, particularly when they slag Tottenham off. But apparently, I've been told I'm not allowed to talk about Tottenham being part of the league.
I have enough.
No.
Of that.
So, I mean, you know, I'm not going to draw any attention to that. You've played 2 games and lost.
Surf's up at number 7.
Not terrible, according to Anushka, my 9-year-old daughter. Not terrible. Yeah, she quite enjoyed it, actually. Although she has no first-hand experience of surfing. Although she's quite an up individual, so...
Hairspray at 6.
Wonderful, according to my wife, to the extent that they intend to go and see it again and maybe take me this time. John Travolta is not the star of the show.
Evan Almighty is at number 5.
Why? Why? Why bother making Evan Almighty?
Bruce Almighty did quite well.
But Evan Almighty, I mean, you know, it's not even the same person. It's insanity
hence,
gone
hence
mad.
The changed name.
Nah, it doesn't fool me, Simon.
Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, number 4.
I think about as good as a movie can get of the book. I think just the production value is sky high. The storytelling is marvellous. I mean, it's never going to be as good as the book, but absolutely fantastic.
And about the best performance from Mr. Redcliffe, I think.
Yeah, I think that stint of taking his clothes off in the West End really helped him.
Transformers at number 3, the aforementioned Michael Bay movie.
Robots in disguise.
What's that then?
That's what it used to be when it was on the telly.
Transformers, robots in disguise.
Which for years I thought was robots in the skies, because some of them flew, but it's actually robots in disguise.
The Simpsons movie, is it number 2?
Funny and really enjoyable, but the question hardcore Simpsons fans, of which I am not one, are asking me, metaphorically, is it funny enough?
Spider Pig does whatever spider can. It's brilliant.
That's a security correspondent for the BBC
somebody, by the way. Impersonating me. I don't know who that was.
But that's a very funny moment. I mean,
brilliant.
I did think, I saw it when I was on holiday in South Africa, so which was quite an interesting experience, but I thought the first half is just so much funnier than the second half. I don't know why, because they had to get into the serious plot line trying to save Springfield. But I thought the first half, laugh out loud funny about 8 or 9 times. That's clearly ticking all the boxes that Mark suggests in a comedy. And then it just sort of tailed away.
I think you're right. It felt compelled to actually have a denouement to the story. But I mean, I still sing Spider Pig to myself at the PC and laugh out loud.
Next time I see it, I'm going to imagine Frank singing.
Yeah.
Which is just as good. That's not number 1, though, because the number 1 movie is Rush Hour 3.
Which is not the third in the series of films based on the original called Rush Hour, the original Russian movie called Chaz Pick, 2006, which is about a man's midlife crisis compounded by the unpleasant surprise that during a routine medical exam he peeks into his file and discovers he has a fatal disease and he only has a few more months to live. I was really hoping that they would have made 2 more films about that dark Russian film. But no, it's the meaningless Jackie Chan jumping about Rush Hour type thing that my son went to see last week and said, I'll never get that money back.
Now, I just get this as clear as possible. All the new releases you've seen, and you're not relying on your 9-year-old opinion.
No,
right?
I've seen all the films we're discussing today.
The movie of the week is clearly going to be, in terms of poster and review space, it's The Bourne Ultimatum, the third in the trilogy, produced by, directed by Paul Greengrass, as we mentioned already, starring Matt Damon. We'll hear Frank's thoughts in a moment. You go first, Hardy. What did you make of this then?
I don't think there's a finer director working in the world, actually, than Paul Greengrass on his
day. Talk him up, go on.
Well, I think when you... Because I was a director for many years in television and in short films. And so, obviously, I'm bringing a bit of the behind-the-scenes knowledge of what he's doing, as well as simply being somebody that loves movies. And the pace is unrelenting through this film. Just under 2 hours. There's never a moment where you're not engaged, you're not thinking. Richard Curtis, that wrote Notting Hill and all that, has this beautiful way of talking about story, which is, he says, at the beginning of a film you throw a rope to the audience at the screen, and with each scene you're pulling them closer to the screen, so eventually they're right there with you. Greengrass is an absolute master at that. The tension, even when it slows down, those rare moments it slows down, it's still absolutely frenetic. It's almost like he's studied people's biorhythms before editing the film. It picks up where Supremacy left off in terms of Jason Bourne trying to discover who he really is. It's a quest. Greengrass himself on Wednesday's show, when you were interviewing, describes this as a quest movie. And I think it does come from the best traditions of quest. There's a beautiful bit where Bourne has... I mean, having grown up watching Bollywood films and seeing one man destroy an army of 43 with nothing more than fluoride toothpaste and a toothpick, I'm perfectly willing to suspend disbelief about what this Jason Bourne can do. Nothing more than dupe the deputy director of the CIA. I think what's amazing about this film, actually, is the fact that a story is told and it feels completely real and justifiable. I mean, it feels very realistic, and you wonder how you're entitled to feel realistic when it's a world one knows so little about. But there are very interesting, and I don't shy away from saying, political points made in the film. I mean, you'd expect that of Greengrass. Of course, he directed United 93, Sunday Bloody Sunday, and I think an exceptional filmmaker. There's a brilliant, one of the most amazing scenes in the film is at Waterloo Station, where they're, Bourne is arranged to meet a journalist from The Guardian who's broken this story about Bourne's real life.
Played by Paddy Considine, very well. Who typically also scared journalist.
Yes,
also, no disrespect, Frank, by the way.
None. No, obviously. He's hard as nails, Gardner. And there's this beautifully choreographed scene in Waterloo Station, and you are aware of the fact that there are so many CCTV cameras around, and the fact that the CIA, in the film at any rate, can take control of what they call those eyeballs. Now, I was in Islington earlier this week making a film for The One Show about the fact that London is the most watched nation in the world, and ironically, outside Orwell's flat in Canonbury, there are 32 CCTV cameras. So one for every 12 people. In Waterloo Station, you see, the problem isn't being watched, it's who controls them. A very political point to me. Also, within the film itself, the bad guys are Americans. So America's almost having a dialogue with itself through this film. There's, mention of rendition. There's mention of water.
What are they? Waterboarding.
Waterboarding.
And black ops and...
Mention of North Africa as a place to take slightly dodgy people. So it feels very much steeped in the sort of language that Frank and his colleagues bring us on a daily basis about events of a security nature.
Yes. And there was a line that Matt Damon used in the programme on Wednesday when he said they took a Republican script and they made a Democratic film out of it. Frank, you approached it with a slightly different set of eyes to everyone else. What did you make of it?
Well, I suppose I had a kind of vested interest in seeing it because the first half features a journalist, a security correspondent who gets plugged full of bullets. So, there's a bit of an irony there. But, I actually recognise bits of it. I mean, in the sense that the security correspondent flew to, I think it was Turin, for a meeting with the CIA station chief. Not that I've ever done that, but, we do have sources. We cultivate people. That's our job, not just in covering security, but anybody, if you're a health correspondent, whatever, that's what you do. You try and get somebody on the inside who can explain things to you, not necessarily break the rules, but to tell you what's really going on. He had that meeting, and he wrote the story in the book, in the paper, in The Guardian. Jason Bourne reads that and immediately tries to get a meeting with him, and that's when they start tracking him. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I loved it, not just because I've been to some of the places. One of the first places I went to the Middle East was Tangier, where some of the film is set, and that is seen to an incredible across-the-roofs chase, where Jason Bourne, who's got these sort of superhuman reflexes, he predicts, presumably, that he's going to have to vault over a wall that's got jagged broken glass into it. So as he's running along being chased by the Moroccan cops, he grabs some laundry, wraps it around his hand and leaps over with that. So he gets away and they don't. And then there's an amazing fight sequence, incredibly well choreographed with shaky camera work deliberately. They use a technique that we've actually used in films sometimes, in making news films, where you actually slow down the shutter speed. You probably know about this, Hadid, where you slow it down to 12 frames a second to create that sort of blurred, kind of slightly hazy effect, which is very, very effective. I spoke to the one of the scriptwriters. I happen to know him from Hollywood. Sorry, I'm dropping names like left, right, and centre here. But I spoke to him yesterday.
Should you be keeping them secret?
Of course, yes. Otherwise, they'll be on to me. But I spoke to him actually, and he had a part in some of them. And I fantastic script lines. Like, come on, what are you waiting for? You're 9 hours behind the toughest target you'll ever track. And things like, get the vehicles. We're going mobile. Well, in Britain, you just say, we'll go by car, shall we? You know. But I asked him why, or what was difficult for him about this? What was the challenge? And he said the challenge is that, unlike Bond, who clearly loves what he's doing, Jason Bourne wants to go home. He just wants to find out what who he is and who's after him, and then finish it. He didn't want to do all of this stuff. So that's what makes it interesting. And how do you keep that going through a third film? And I think they've managed to do that.
It's the ambiguity of Bourne's character, because in a way he has been trained so well that he's able to take on the CIA who trained him, and they're unable to intercept him in his own personal ambiguity. I mean, it's almost Shakespearean. It has a kind of Hamlet type, kind of meditation on self, although with a slightly happier ending.
A believable portrayal of the way the CIA operates?
No. Yes and no. First of all, there is an executive order signed by the President of the United States. It's executive order number 12333 that prohibits the US from any political assassinations. So theoretically, they don't do assassinations. I have no idea if they do or don't. I mean, there was a big debate just on the eve of the Gulf War as to whether it was legal for them to take out Saddam Hussein and therefore end the war early. And they had a go at it with sort of high-level bombing. But, are there Jason Bourne characters around the place? No. They do have a paramilitary side. They do black ops. It's very much in their charter to do covert operations, as does SIS, the Secret Intelligence Service here. But do they run around topping people? No. Although if you listen to the Russian to people in the Kremlin, they'll say, yes, that's what we're up to.
The scene that Hardeep mentioned, which I agree is one of the best scenes at Waterloo Station, is it possible for that kind of thing to happen, whereby the CIA would say, we need to be there, we need to look at all these CCTV cameras, we need to be in charge? Can they do
Absolutely
that?
Absolutely not. No, the Met would have charge. The Met, you get some plod from New Scotland Yard or from the Counterterrorism Command who would be, would have control over something like that, would have authority. They might well have an American there, but the idea that the sort of the CIA substation, of course they have quite a big presence here in London. We are their biggest ally, Britain. They've got plenty of CIA operatives in the UK. But the idea that they would take over control of something like that is sheer fantasy. It's great film, but it's sheer fantasy. No, the Brits would, and it would be the police who would have authority there. On the CIA thing, I actually spoke to their press office a few minutes ago just to sort of find out what their view of it all was. They've been quite mealy-mouthed about it, actually, but amazingly, they do have a full-time entertainment liaison officer.
What a great job.
Isn't it great? So tell me, what do you do? I'm entertainment for the CIA, the world's biggest intelligence agency. But the Langley scenes are quite cleverly done. Langley in Virginia is where the CIA headquarters is, and I've actually been there for a press briefing, so it is Langley, and they do have the stars on the wall there of all their fallen agents. And there's a line in there where Jason Bourne, towards the end, he finally meets his nemesis, the guy who was in charge of this terrible treatment where he was brainwashed, and he points his weapon at him and then at the last minute lowers it and says, nah, you're not worth a star at Langley. You're not worth shooting and making you a hero.
But Hardeep's point is it is a political film, in the same way that Paul's other film, including The Murder of Stephen Lawrence and Bloody Sunday, as Hardeep mentioned, and you get the feeling that there is very much a political agenda here. It's not it's not vitriol, it's not too preachy, but there is an agenda.
There is, definitely. I think it's about what is acceptable in what we're doing, you know, and what, in their case, the CIA is doing. And there's a particular line there where somebody says something along the lines of, do you have any idea what you're getting into here? I mean, where do you think this will end? And the CIA head of operations says, it'll end when we win. And that is so reflective of an attitude that I've come across in Washington from a lot of people in government and in the military. In the early stages of this dreadfully named war on terror, you know, sort of around 2002, you know, we will do whatever it takes. There's a big rethink now. I mean, I don't want to get sucked into politics here, but I mean, I think, you know, there's a bit of a backlash against that sort of attitude that it's screwed up. And anyhow, apart from anything, guys, it's wrong.
But I think that here's what's absolutely fascinating about this film is it doesn't mention Iraq or the Middle East once, yet inevitably we will get sucked into talking about America's role as a global policeman.
But it's a thriller with an IQ.
Oh, absolutely. It's a fantastic film. It's Matt Damon's finest work. Is, you know, I mean, he was great in The Talented Mr. Ripley. Good Will Hunting was fine. Dogma was a really good movie. His finest work has been, for my money, the Bourne trilogy.
OK, if you've seen it, 85058, mayo@bbc.co.uk. Frank, thanks very much indeed. Appreciate
it. I said it's wrong, sorry, well, by that I meant it was waterboarding and torture, just in case I get some angry emails. What do you mean the war on terror is wrong?
The Five Live Football Daily. Our latest podcast, rounding up all the football news, interviews and discussion you could possibly need in a convenient, free downloadable package. Find out how to subscribe or get an individual episode at bbc.co.uk/5live. The 5Live Football Daily. bbc.co.uk/5live.
On the subject of the Bourne film, Anthony in Wimbledon saw it last night. Fantastic, albeit requiring suspension of disbelief. I have to say you're doing a good job of giving away much of the plot in your discussion, which I guess might be true.
Yeah, but the fact he marries Joan Allen at the end shouldn't...
It turns out he's a ghost.
We've had Kamlesh Bahanda send an email in about Chuck the India. She describes
it... Oh, she's at number 10 as well.
Yes, yeah. The one that I didn't know anything about, none of my extended family had seen. A sort of Bollywood version of Coach Carter, disgraced hockey coach played by Shah Rukh Khan. The best-looking Indian actor in the world takes a motley group of women players to the Hockey World Cup in Australia and via lots of emotional spills, thrills, actually win the World Cup based on a true story. Talk about giving the ending away.
Which you have done.
I think you guess with Bollywood that, you know what I mean, they're going to win the Cup.
Howard Marshall says, saw the Bourne film in New York last week. The theatre was so full, I had to sit at the front. The whole movie is shot in the handheld jerky style, which up close... which I was, made me feel very sick. I had to close my eyes to avoid a bilious feeling and eventually fall asleep. I'd recommend seeing it seated and at the rear of the theatre.
Tiny correction, it's not handheld, it's what you call loose in the bowl. But slightly irritating sometimes, I have to say, my only criticism of the film.
Well, I mean, on that point, Guy in Newcastle, is it just me or did the Bourne Ultimatum have such a small budget that Paul Greengrass couldn't afford a tripod for his camera? The shaky cam effect gave me a migraine of biblical proportions, and quite frankly, the action sequences were nigh on impossible to follow. There is what could be done. There is what could have been one of cinema's greatest fight scenes if it wasn't for the fact it was edited so quickly that you couldn't make out what was going on. Such a waste. Well, I think he's wrong on that.
I think he's very wrong.
Follow exactly what was going on.
I do think it's a beautifully paid... I mean, you know, everyone in every craft department on that movie has played an absolute blinder, unlike Tottenham at Everton on Tuesday night.
Thank you. In fact, Mark Kermode has rung in, as he always does when someone else is doing his job.
Pressure then.
Just to point out that it was him who said that Paul Greengrass is one of the finest directors out there.
Oh, so if Mark says it, nobody else can say it.
Anyway, on that subject of having a go, here's just a little clip of what happened on Wednesday, where Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass was on the on the programme. I asked Matt if it was true that he wouldn't have signed up for the second Bourne instalment if Paul Greengrass hadn't been at the helm.
Yeah, and I definitely wouldn't have signed up for the third one without Paul at the helm, and I definitely wouldn't sign up for a fourth one without Paul at the helm. But
I'm on holiday.
These movies, I think, are work really because of, you know, because Doug Liman directed the first one and Paul directed these subsequent two. And it was a very easy decision for me once Paul said he wanted to do it. Because really, Paul didn't have to do it. He had done Bloody Sunday, and then he went to do the Bourne Supremacy, which is a big Hollywood movie with a big budget. And that movie did everything he needed it to do for him. It got terrific reviews. The movie made a lot of money, and he became this white hot commodity in Hollywood. And so he went off and did United 93, got nominated for the Oscar, and all of that. And so he really didn't have to do another Bourne film, but he wanted to, and we had a great time working together. And so he said, you know what, I'm game for another one. So that was my cue to sign up for it. And I mean, now there's just no talking to him.
And is there another one, Matt?
It's doubtful. I never say never, just as a policy in life. But you know, again, our story, the story, the kind of internal engine that drives this guy is his quest for identity, and that's over. So unless it became something else, which it could, I don't see it happening. But having said that, if Paul wanted to do it, I would do it.
What? I actually have a rule actually in my household that I will do a new Bourne film when Tottenham finish in the top four in the Premiership.
So that's a 3-CD set then?
Absolutely guaranteed. Barry in Redditch. I'm going to see Bourne tonight with my other half. Seriously looking forward to it. The Bourne films so far have been excellent. Let's face it, these films kicked the stale Bond franchise where it hurt, which was seriously needed. I think these films were partly responsible for the excellent film that Casino Royale turned out to be, and it was long overdue as the last few Bond films had been dreadful, and that's coming from a Bond fan. The best work Matt Damon has done so far. This is the turning point in his career for sure, and he does look fantastic in this, doesn't he?
He looks so incredibly comfortable in the skin of that character, and I think that, you know, I think he was fantastic in The Talented Mr. Ripley as well. I think he's a fine actor who slightly struggles to find the right part all the time, but I think this is great for him.
It's not the only movie that's out this week. It's the biggest one. What else is out, Hardy?
A movie called Bratz
with a Z.
With a Z, which already you've lost me, frankly. I feel our culture's Americanized enough without the addition of words like brats. Now, a friend of mine, Gordon Kennedy, was in Robin Hood, and I met him on the tube a few months ago, and I said, where are you off to? And he goes, rather embarrassingly, I'm going to my agent's office to look at a doll they've made of me off the back of Robin Hood, the series. And I said, you've finally arrived. So Bratz is finally arriving in reverse, because they started as dolls, became an animated series, and now they're in a movie. Quite why they've bothered, every core of my being wants to swear on air as to how I feel about this film.
Every part of your contract insists that you don't.
Yeah, which I've yet to sign, so be nervous, be very nervous. To sum it up, it's about these four all-too-pretty, all-too-beautiful, multiracial, of course, it's American 2007, Simon, girls who all go to the big school. And basically, it's summed up by Meredith, the principal's daughter, played by John Voight. What is he thinking?
We're not target audience here, Hardy, are we?
No, but nonetheless, I think one can be objective to some extent and trying to praise it.
No, you're not.
To be a fully rounded piece of creative work, which it really isn't. I mean, the shtick is these four girls turn up, end up being poisoned by the clique system. Americans and British divided by a common language. They call it clique, we call it clique.
They're wrong.
They're always wrong. Tomato, potato. And, of course, then the girls come together at the end and, you know, I don't think we're giving too much away by saying, there's a happy ending. I took my 9-year-old to this and she was into the Bratz, the dolls, and she watched a bit of the animation and she was nonplussed. So she's the target audience, slightly old for the target audience, maybe a year old, but nonetheless, she found it eyeball achingly bad. Although I think I made her say that, but I don't think she enjoyed it. I think it's just rubbish. It's actually just rubbish.
Some more of your correspondence still on Bourne. Kevin Guilford, Bye Bye Bond is the best film I've ever seen. At the end of the fight scene, you could hear the audience take a breath. Matt in Dorset saw Bourne last night. Perfect end to the trilogy. A breathless chase movie with intelligence. Greengrass and Damon on top form. I'm watching it tonight. Please stop revealing the plot or I shall be forced to put on my Des O'Connor CD. John in Selby. Simon saw Bourne yesterday. Was gripped from start to finish. After the summer of threequels, this by far away tops them all.
Is there a single email there saying Bratz is good? No.
Well, let's give it a moment, shall we? Because we had a U2 versus I've forgotten who it was now. Elkie Brooks text vote a few weeks ago.
Did Elkie Brooks win?
She did, yeah. So it's the way it goes. So if you want to have a Bratz is good contest. I'm sure we can look for anyone who's seen the Bratz movie and liked it and tell us why. 85058. Anything else to mention? What else is out?
Well, there is an absolutely cracking film. Normally when we get DVDs to watch or books to read for reviews and stuff, you normally have a look and you do this terrible thing, I do it anyway, of leaving the one you think is going to be the least interesting to the end, and you do it by title or by reputation. So the last film I watched this week was Eagle vs. Shark. I thought, can't be good. What an absolutely brilliant film. It's, if you like 40-year-old Virgin, if you like Napoleon Dynamite, if you like You, Me and Everyone We Know, then you will absolutely love Eagle vs. Shark. It got nominated, I found out, having watched it at Sundance for the Grand Jury Award. It didn't win. It's just, it's a really quirky, funny film that has not been adulterated by a big studio coming in and saying there are issues with the story or make the characters more likeable. It's got an independent feeling, and the honesty is just screaming out of the screen at you, and it's funny. I laughed all the way through.
Who's it for? Who's it aimed at?
I think it's for people that really like films. I think it would work for, you know, it's not, you know, it's actually some of the sort of people that would go and see Bourne. People that like movies, people that like quirky independent movies, but people that like to laugh. If you like Meet the Parents, I'd go and see this. It's not slapstick like Meet the Parents was at points, but it's just very funny, very charming, and reminiscent of Napoleon Dynamite. I think it owes quite a lot to Napoleon Dynamite, which I know, Simon, isn't everyone's cup of Darjeeling. But on second and third viewing, I found it much funnier than I thought I would. It's based around this lovely girl called Lily who gets fired from a burger place and falls in love with Jared. And he refers to her as the best female games player he's ever met. And he is the eagle, and she is the shark. It's their favourite animals. It's just an absolutely delightful film. It's got one of my two favourite lines in the film. One is when she says, life's full of hard bits, but between the hard bits are some really lovely bits, which I thought was charming.
So Bourne Ultimatum's going to be taking up most of the poster space and will probably be number one. Bratz the movie probably won't be troubling it for that top position.
No.
It sounds as though Eagle vs. Shark will have a big fan base, maybe during the holidays. But it sounds like a word of mouth movie as much.
Absolutely.
As
it's the sort of thing you could easily find on DVD, you know, after the event, or watch on television after the event. But I would, and it's not necessarily, it's shot with a cinematic vision, so it'd be nicer to see it in the cinema through these beautifully constructed wide shots. And it shows that you don't need money to make a film, you need a story. It's just, it's not, listen, it's not a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant film that's going to change the world, but it's going to entertain
you.
Worth
looking out. Okay, that's Eagle vs. Shark. What else, honey?
We've got a film called Copying Beethoven, which is, on paper, a fascinating story about a woman who, as his faculties were failing, was sent to copy Beethoven's music for him and assist him musically, and coming up against the obvious misogyny of the age, the fact that she was a woman and nobody took her seriously, but the fact that she changed this guy's life. In the clip here, she has been tidying up one or two of his manuscripts. This is a glorified TV movie, and the great thing about TV movies is they stop every 15 minutes so you can get up and leave the room and make some tea. This is unrelenting. It's like the United Nations of accents. I've no idea where these people... I mean, he started that sentence, Beethoven, he started off as being sort of German, became Austrian, a bit of Walloon, and then just decided I'm going to be American for the final phrase of the sentence.
How do you spot a Walloon accent?
Well, you know, you spend a lot of time with the Walloon people.
Which you've done.
No, but thanks to the unique way the BBC's funded, there's a website I can go to and hear Walloon accents. It's rubbish, frankly. It's a lovely idea thrown away and wasted. It's pants, absolute pants, and old ones at that.
John in London, we're trying to find someone who liked Bratz. John says, I thought Bratz was terrible. My younger sister, age 8, burst into tears with frustration minutes after leaving the cinema. What a farce. Why she was frustrated after leaving the cinema, John doesn't explain. Sarah on the M4 just sends a text that says, Bratz is good, which I don't think counts as a review, does it?
No, it's. I think her suggestion for a printed T-shirt that will be available in high streets.
Tea from London, Bratz, totally politically correct, dross, -20/10. And he does it in capital letters to indicate that maybe he's a little bit cross.
I think so. We've got two films this week. We've got Bourne Ultimatum, which is, you know, not is political but not correct. And we've got Bratz, which is just nonsense. Also, there's this thing called Mishi, the water giant, which I'm compelled contractually to talk about, which is a kid's action-adventure about a water giant. It's an action-adventure movie by numbers. Unfortunately, the numerical system they're operating in is a binary system. It only has two numbers.
So your movie of the week would be?
Do you know what? Bourne doesn't need me. I'm going to give you Eagle vs. Shark. Please, go see it.
Mark, you can stop listening now and remember, as your family are doubtless telling you, you're on holiday, you don't have to listen.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.